3rd, it's Tuesday. President Rick, Bernard, Ellis, Kopanen, and Donnelly. First matter on the agenda is members need to sign this committee report if you haven't already done so. Bills were moved out last week, so members could be taking a look at that. Next is a constitutional amendment on requiring legislative confirmation of appointees to public corporations. We talked about this. It's in your packets under proposed committee legislation. We had postponed to give the members of the committee a chance to take a look at it. Are there any objections to the committee introducing this as a committee bill?
No.
Okay, seeing no objections, we'll introduce that legislation as committee legislation. Next on this is to let the members know that we will have Ron Lear. We're not using the microphones yet, but at 2 o'clock we're going to go on teleconference with Ron Lear. He's in his Anchorage office. So we will be changing gears at 2 o'clock to deal with that. And that will be on House Bill 432 and 433. 433, you might remember, is the moratorium bill. So, if I could get a list of the people who testify, and I think Representative Boyer's tied up in finance for a while. Is there a representative of Speaker Grusendorf's office here today? Okay, nobody here from that.
Representative
Donnelly,
Doug Ritchie from Representative
Grusendorf's office is right out in the hallway. Oh, okay. Well, why don't you have him come in, and we'll...
You're on.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just waiting for Red to show up. Give him a chance to show up, because he's the chair of the committee. Okay, please, have a seat. Tell us where we're at with House Bill 454.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we on teleconference?
No, not till 2 o'clock.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Douglas Rickey. I'm the special assistant to Representative Grusendorf, who's the prime sponsor of House Bill 454. I think in your package you should have a memorandum from Representative Grusendorf and a proposed committee substitute for House Bill 454. For a brief overview, this bill is in response to some intent that was in the FY88 budget, directing the Fred Division of Fish and Game to explore alternate funding mechanisms for state hatcheries. A working group was put together to address that intent, and the working group recommended that qualified regional aquaculture associations be given authority to operate certain hatcheries and be allowed to harvest enough salmon beyond that that is needed for the common property resource and for broodstock for the hatchery to make up for their operating expenses. This is basically a bill to attempt to save general fund dollars that everyone basically realizes are not going to be there for the hatchery program. The bill gives the regional aquaculture associations that are located in the same region as the affected hatcheries a preference in the selection process. It's in effect an exemption from the requirements of AS 3630, their procurement code that was passed by the legislature last year. If the regional association cannot meet the contract criteria prepared by the Department of Fish and Game, then the department is required to solicit proposals for the operation of hatcheries on a competitive basis, as required by the procurement code. The state would retain, the bill makes quite clear, the state would retain all ownership rights to the hatcheries and would continue to manage the resource. The day-to-day operation of the hatcheries would be the responsibility of the contract operator, subject to an annual operations plan prepared by the operator and approved by the department. Representative Grusendorf believes that the approach taken in this bill with the problem of continued hatchery operation is a sound one, and he hopes the committee will act expeditiously in this legislation. I'd be glad to answer any questions about the bill. We also have Dr. Brian Ali, who is the director of the Fred Division of Fish and Game, as well as representatives from, I believe, three of the regional aquaculture associations that can also answer any questions.
Right. My staff worked with your office in developing the committee substitute, and you're happy with the statements now.
Yeah, as a point of information for the committee, this is the committee substitute that's attached to the memorandum. Representative Grusendorf was adopted yesterday by the Senate Resources Committee. Just briefly, the differences between the two bills are rather minor. There were some language changes. One in Section 1, which took out the word transfer and instead used the phrase provided for the operation of the hatchery. That, in conjunction with sub E of section 1, makes quite clear that the state is retaining all its ownership rights in the hatcheries, and the state's responsibility for management of the resources is not affected. The other change was one that came up after the original bill was drafted, and that basically allows the commissioner to waive the requirement that the operator apply for a permit. The permit process is rather lengthy, and it's really contemplated for the situation where a new hatchery is about to come online or about to be open, and that's not the situation that the legislation is trying to address.
Okay. Representative Copeland? Representative Ellis?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the committee substitute for House Bill number 454, Labor and Commerce.
Mr. Chairman, before a couple of questions, if I may.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Furness, discussion?
Yeah, discussion, if I may, to the presenter. Perhaps to the chair. This bill is not a new document. It's been around for quite some time. As I recall, Representative Bettisworth, doing probably the 12th and 13th legislature, had offered similar legislation. I thought it had passed. Perhaps one could enlighten us as to what has happened, that this concept is not...
Okay, Representative Furness, is your discussion germane to the motion to adopt the committee substitute?
Well, I'm hoping that we can... it is not... Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I thought you passed it from the committee. I'll go with the motion.
Okay, is there objection to the motion to adopt the committee substitute? I'm saying the committee substitute's before us, and then Representative Furness has a question as to the whole bill, so possibly the witness could address that.
Again, my question is, this idea was presented, I believe, in the 12th and 13th legislature by Representative Bettisworth. Okay, and it come with my understanding that it had already been done. That is, transferring some of the hatcheries under the freight division to at least private ownership or at least private control, particularly where the state has, in essence, surplus those units. So to your knowledge and your research, what had happened to stop the legislation in the past?
I'm Mr. Chairman, Representative Furness. I'm not sure I can answer that question just because I don't have any institutional memory that would be required. But I will say that there was some question as to whether or not Fish and Game already had this authority after the effective date of the procurement code, which was January 1. It became a very serious question whether they had, and that's the point of the legislation. To my knowledge, they, without this bill, they don't have the authorization to do it.
Representative Furness?
Mr. Chairman, I understand there is someone here from the freight division that perhaps can answer that question.
Yeah. Could they, would you like to, we're running out of chairs, don't we?
Oh, I could speak from here.
Can you, Donna, can you monitor from there? Okay. Mm-hmm. Would you state your name for the record and...
Right. Yes, my name is, Mr. Chairman, my name is Brian Ali. I'm the director of the Fred Division. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. As I understand the legislation that you may be speaking about related to a transfer of hatcheries from state ownership to the private nonprofit sector, to the regional association, specifically some 3 or so, 4 years ago. That was a different concept, as I understand it, that was vetoed by Governor Sheffield at that time. As I understand, the issues, the differences between the two, we're talking about the contract of the operation only of 4 state-owned hatcheries. It does not transfer ownership of the hatcheries at all. They would retain, the state would retain ownership of the hatcheries. So it's only the operation of the state hatchery to the Regional Aquaculture Association on behalf of their fishermen who benefit from these hatcheries. So I think that's the principal difference between those two legislative thrusts.
Chairman Furness?
Okay, I'm just scanning here. Perhaps that is a major difference. In the past, it has been the feeling that if the state no longer had use for these units, the proper mechanism would be to transfer those totally to the private sector. And I see now you're speaking of a contract. I guess that, with that in mind, what would be the division of responsibility, since it's a contract between the private association or private development, in this case of the state, what responsibilities does the state maintain and what responsibility would that private entity undertake in managing diverse hatcheries?
Possibly represent from...
Okay. No, I think I would defer to us for the technical aspects of the contract.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chairman. We have a contract. We were negotiating a contract with the Regional Aquaculture Associations prior to the procurement code coming into effect. And in those negotiations, we were looking at a long-term contract that would allow the associations to borrow money if they needed to for capital construction monies and or operational monies. And that the long-term contract was necessary in order to provide the income stream there as collateral for loans from the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Our responsibilities on behalf of the state are to lay out a whole series of control mechanisms that we currently have in the private nonprofit statutes that require a permit, require a public hearing, require a basic management plan which lays out the species, the contribution of the common property fishery, lays out, in other words, the public interest, also requires an annual management plan as well as a fish transport permit which would look at the genetics and the disease impacts of transferring fish. So that the I think the responsibilities are the policy and the management and the regulation of these hatcheries remain in the FRED division's area of responsibility. The responsibility then for the regional association would be for the operation of the hatchery, the continuance of the production, maximize and optimize the facility, produce the fish for the common property fishery, and the economic benefits that accrue both to the fishery and to the community in terms of direct, indirect, and induced economic benefits. So there's, in a nutshell, is an operational responsibility to carry out the mission of the hatchery.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if I may draw your attention to page 2 of the bill, line 7 through 10, subsection E. A contract under this section for the operation of the hatchery may not affect the state's ownership of the hatchery and does not affect the state's responsibility to manage the resource. It appears to me that the state's basically not giving up very much control. You've got a third party here who is, you know, basically stepping in your shoes, but you still have a great say as to what's going to happen. It appears to me that the other concept is much better. If you're going to relinquish it, then relinquish it, put it in the private sector, let them run it. And it doesn't appear that you're moving too far from the central location of the action with this particular piece of legislation. I'd have to really research this a little further, but that's my initial thinking on it. I guess in closing, Mr. Chairman, I sort of like the other idea much better, rather than the contractual relationship where the estates simply turn over through ownership and control of the surplus hatcheries to the private sector, and simply let them do it. This subsection E here, line 7 through 9, tells me that very little is going to change, at least as far as the legislation is concerned. That's
okay. Right, now, for the record, we've been joined by Representatives Boucher, Furness, and Davidson. Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No, we're not on telecom, so
2 o'clock. Thank you. I think it goes a little bit deeper than interference in the private sector here. We're talking about private non-profit hatchery organizations or aquaculture associations. And
Representative Davidson, do you have a question for the witnesses, either of the witnesses?
No, I have
a statement. Okay, well, why don't we hold that for a committee discussion? Questions for the witnesses, Representative Copeland?
What do you think we're just to delete the 3830
statute?
Save a lot of
big
problems.
Sorry. Are there any additional questions for the witnesses? Representative Ellis.
I have a question for Fish and Game. Did the department conduct public hearings on the general subject of transfer of state responsibility to the Regional Aquaculture Association? I had a constituent call, and I really didn't understand exactly what she was talking about, but she was aware of this transfer and was concerned that she didn't for some reason have the opportunity to testify, or the meeting was held at an inconvenient time or something. I'm not sure what the concern was exactly, but did public hearings were held? Can you give us the details of that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we, in response to legislative intent to look for new ways to fund the public enhancement program, we created a funding work group in some 8 months ago, started on this task. We had a number of series of meetings with the working group. We invited general public, we invited fishermen, representatives, regional associations, legislative staff, sport fishermen, etc. We had two public meetings, one in Anchorage and one in Juneau. They were both publicly noticed, and we have a full funding report that we submitted to the legislature on the 10th day of the session. It's about 30 pages long. It details specifically what we did, who was in the funding group, etc. And out of this funding group, the recommendation to not transfer, but contract the operation at four hatcheries in order to offset the declining general fund budget that is affecting the enhancement program. That's the solution in the short run that came out of that working group over this period of time. So we did have a series of meetings that funding report is available for distribution. We have broadly distributed it. I have executive summaries with me if you would be interested in those.
And the general tenor of the public testimony was?
It seemed to be favorable in terms of what we were talking about. There were many people who were, not many people, but there were people who would put forth the argument that this program is in the best interest of the state of Alaska. It contributes significantly to the economy. Why is its budget being cut, and why is the program being reduced, that kind of thing. And we tried to deal with that, but we said that this was a practical, we felt, alternative or option that was feasible in the short run in the FY89 budget year, which begins in July 1, 1988, of course. And so we see this as a rather critical issue to allow, in a cooperative manner, this program to go forth. We worked in 1988 to institute cooperative agreements with regional associations to operate some two hatcheries and user groups helping the Hidden Falls hatchery for the third cooperative agreement to offset the cost of the hatchery operation in FY88 alone. So this is kind of an extension of that effort in response to legislative intent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions for the witnesses? Representative Furness.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it's obvious, but I made mention a minute ago of the section on page 2, 7 through 9, where the state still maintains a contract for the operation of a hatchery may not affect the state ownership and does not affect the state's responsibility for management. But let me draw your attention to page 3. Lines 11 through 21, and it speaks here that it has to do with the sale of the actual salmon and the eggs. And it states here that after you sell the actual salmon and you sell the eggs, that any monies left from that, or any money generated from that, must go for debt service, reasonable costs of operating the facilities, salmon rehabilitation, but any net proceeds shall be expended, and shall expand the remaining of those funds on other fishery activities of a qualified regional association. Basically, this thing ties down. I don't see why a nonprofit group would want to get into this. They have absolutely no control. Not only do you maintain control of the management and the resource, they also tell them how they're supposed to spend the money. Okay, I mean, that's just...
I think that is a question to the...
I see Dr. Lee raising his hand.
Okay.
I would note that it does say, except as otherwise provided in the contract, in the beginning part of that section. So the idea is to have flexibility in terms of fish and games, what fish and game can do right into their contracts, but I think Dr. Lee can elaborate on why that's like that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is essentially the way the current private nonprofit statute operates currently. This is so that it just further delineates the fact that these funds, in addition to debt service and all the other things, would go to the regional association, and that's the group, of course, that we're contracting with for the operation of the hatchery. So this is just a kind of a further delineation of the current statute. These additions and, in fact, the entire language and thrust of this legislation has been reviewed thoroughly by the Attorney General's staff and has had the concurrence as well of the legislative council and legal staff as well, working together cooperatively on the language.
Okay. Further questions for the witnesses? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you
for your testimony. Sherry Shelley?
I'm Sherry Shelley with the Alaska Public Employees Association. My testimony really doesn't relate to the merits of the day, whether or not the hatchery should or should not be contracted out. The state will still have to meet the requirements of APEA's contract and Local 71's contract, I believe, whether or not they're paying nonprofits in either fish or dollars to operate those hatcheries. Obviously, fish have a monetary value. What my testimony relates to is I'm suggesting to you that this language, which reads, and the regional association should have a hiring preference for hatchery positions to qualify state employees who are laid off as a result of this transfer. Approximately 11 employees will be laid off. APA has received notice that the department was going to contract out these hatcheries, but we haven't been contacted with regard to any provision for the employees to retain their employment. Given the fact that the regional association is given a preference, is accepted from the State Procurement Act, and is, in fact, the department is setting up other criteria for the operation of these hatcheries, it seems reasonable that one of the criteria be giving preference to the employees who are currently working in the hatcheries. This preference would not require, nor does APEA's contract requirement, that the association pay an amount equal to the state salary and benefits, so it wouldn't affect the association's adversely economically.
Okay, my first question is, was there any member of the committee that was going to propose this amendment? We do have a representative from the Attorney General's office here. If the committee would like to hear from them first, or was there somebody?
I'd like to put it on the table.
Okay,
and then discussion.
We have a movement, motion from Representative Boucher to adopt the proposed amendment for purposes of discussion. Seconded by Representative Kopanen. Representative first.
I just have a question. The gentleman from the Fred Division. If I could draw your attention again to line 20, page 3, the term other fisheries activities. Does this include personnel salaries?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, did you say page 3, line 20?
Page 3, line 20. This isn't a draft, sir. Yes. Line 20, expand the remaining funds on other fisheries activity. My question on that phrase is, does that include personnel salaries?
In the course of operating the hatchery, the cost recovery of the facility would cover the salaries for the employees working in the hatchery. Maybe I didn't understand your question.
Well, again, we seem to limit here as to what the nonprofit group can use the funds generated from either the sale of the actual salmon or the sale of the eggs. It is to include debt service, expanding the facility, salmon rehabilitation, fisheries research, the cost of operating the Qualified Regional Association. I guess it's in there. I was asking that salaries, were salaries included in the term other fisheries activity that seemed to be for the balance of the dollars are to be spent. But perhaps it's covered up in the cost of operating the Qualified Regional Association.
Mr. Chairman, I think that would specify other activities than are listed above, which would be directed at enhancing the fisheries in the area. It could involve salaries associated with those activities, or perhaps would involve some other kinds of purchases of equipment to do tagging with or something like that. And that is my understanding in any case.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Are there any questions for the witness, Mr. Gemini?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sure. On this, when you opened up, you said something about the employees and the way they were reported, and I missed that. I didn't get the relationship between that and this.
What I initially said was, this does not address the issue of contracting out. Both APEA and Local 71 have criteria in their bargaining contracts that set up when the state can contract out. And in fact, in APEA's contract, the state has to be able to contract out for less than the current state operations. In the Local 71 contract, in addition to that, the contractor has to pay state salaries and benefits plus a fixed amount hourly for benefits. Our position is, as far as contracting this out, whether the department is paying someone in actual dollars or they're giving them a resource like Salem, which has a dollar amount, they are still subject to the contracting out provisions of both of those agreements. However, if in fact the department finds it is more economical to contract out the work, then we believe that since you're giving preference to the regional associations, one of the criteria in them receiving that preference is that the employees be given a hiring preference.
Okay, Representative Davidson and Representative Ferris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Shelley, have you identified approximately 11 positions that would be transferred as our lost, at least to state employees? Have you any indication as to how many of those 11 would be interested, in fact, in becoming employees of the various regional associations?
I don't have any idea of how many of those employees would be interested in that type of employment, but clearly they're working at the hatcheries now. There's no reason to suspect that they wouldn't be interested in that as opposed to unemployment.
Would this be a one-time, if I may continue, Mr. Chairman? If we were to add this amendment, would this be a one-time opportunity for those? For example, if they didn't take it then, would the associations at a later date then be obliged to give them the preference?
My assumption was that this would be a one-time opportunity to go to work for the association.
I have a further question for Brian O'Lee.
Okay.
Did you step out? Yeah.
Do you want to ask him? Okay. Representative Furness?
Yes, I have a question to Shelley. Since the state is contracting, is it envisioned that these persons may still be state employees?
No.
They won't be.
It would be envisioned, except they were contracting out. Part of the criteria of the contract would be a hiring preference for employees, but the employees would, in fact, be terminated and just be on a layoff with state employment.
I see.
But the department has, the reason we are extremely concerned about this with Fish and Game has experienced numerous layoffs, and the layoffs in that department are very long.
Okay, Representative Davidson, you had a question for you.
Another question for the witness.
Okay.
First, if I may. Ms. Shelley, have your people had any contact or discussed this at all with any of the regional associations?
The only contact APA has had with the department is we received a letter notifying us that they were in fact going to contract out these hatcheries, and we received that sometime in December. But there hasn't been any conversation about putting it in the contract, a preference from the board.
So there's been no effort on either party's part to
The conversations have been more about whether or not you are going to contract them out and is it more cost effective and what happens if you do.
Then to Ms. Charlie, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Charlie, this amendment, would it have any, would the regional associations have any problem with this amendment?
Chairman, I can't really speak for them. I think they're all here, so they could probably speak to that better than I. I just would like to, if I might, for just a brief moment, clarify the issue in terms of, at least in my own mind, and that is that the four hatcheries that we're talking about will be closed. The option is they'll either be closed. We don't have sufficient funds to fund the hatchery program. We worked for some 8 months to try and come up with a method by which, working with legislative intent to do just that, an innovative method to avoid the cessation of the production and the economic benefits that accrue from these programs. So the issue, I think it needs to be looked at in that context. That is to say, there won't be a job anyway because the hatcheries would be closed down. Now, on the other hand, we're working with our own employees to find them positions within the FRED division, and I believe we have been discussing that with you. If I understand it, there are no Local 71 people who would be losing positions by virtue of this issue, because they have found positions within the threat division. Those are maintenance engineers specifically. And it is also the case that a number of the regional associations, I know for a fact, are planning to hire these individuals. As to whether this particular preference right would be acceptable to them, I couldn't speak to that issue.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if there are local or association representatives in the room, I would be interested in their comment. I would only like to add that I think that as jobs disappear in both the private and the public sector, I for one, as a public decision maker, think that we do have a responsibility to find or assist in employment for people whose jobs are disappearing.
Okay. Representative Menard?
Sometime when it's convenient, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned someone from the AG's office was here. And
right, I intend to call them next.
Okay. Right.
Are there further questions for the witness? Seeing none, thank you. Ms. Regal?
We're discussing primarily the amendment right now.
Exactly.
Right, Mr. Chairman?
The motion is before us.
On the amendment.
To adopt the amendment.
Yes. And I want to just get it on the table. It's a suggestion that's been brought forth. I'm going to listen to the debate.
Exactly. Well, I understand it was for the purposes of discussion.
You.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Virginia Regal from the Attorney General's Office. I have been assisting Department of Fish and Game somewhat in developing the bill and amendments to the bill. Concerning this issue, I was just handed the amendment out in the hall 5 minutes before I walked in here, so I've just been able to jot down a couple of ideas and concerns that it immediately raised to me. I'll try to articulate those as much as possible and would be willing to submit further written discussion of this in the future if the committee deems it necessary. It's my understanding that employees of these hatcheries who are not relocated to other Department of Fish and Game or other state jobs will either be laid off or terminated from the state employment. And it should be understood that if they're hired by the RAAs, they will not be state employees. I find that, as written, this amendment does leave open several questions of potential future state liability. I think it should be clear that the state can't legally require a private employer to retain employees with whom it is not satisfied for good reasons. The question arises as to what will the state's ongoing liability be to enforce the provisions of this contract if it is written into the contract that a preference must be given. Say if the terminated employee is not satisfied with his or her job with the RAA, I would like to know what APA sees the state's responsibility as being with regard to the terms of employment offered by the RAA. For example, what if the RAA offers a current employee who is a manager of a hatchery, offers that employee a job as a seasonal worker taking eggs during the summer season? Will that meet the requirement of this section? Does that constitute giving a preference, or are they contemplating that the RAAs must offer the current managers jobs as managers? I know Ms. Shelley just said that she understands that they will not be required to pay the same salaries, but will it be sufficient for them to offer them a lesser position? And what will the state's ongoing responsibility be under a provision like this to enforce this provision with respect to people who are no longer state employees, but who may claim to be perhaps third-party beneficiaries of a contractual provision? So I think that this does raise some serious legal issues of liability that I think should be further addressed.
If the committee would allow me a question, do you see any possible problems with this under the state's equal protection clause as identified in the recent Francis decision as limiting preferences in low residents?
Well, that was essentially an Alaska hire provision. I don't know that that would be implicated in this case. I think that there are different circumstances, but as I said, I can do further research and get back to the committee if you wish.
Any questions for the witness? Coming in first.
Yes, just Mr. Chairman, this is Frigo. The amendment makes sense on the surface in that, as the representative Kodiak has stated, because of the job situation, I guess the tremendous cutbacks in Fish and Game, that there's an opportunity to at least give some initial preference, a one-time preference to the persons who may be phased out on a hatchery-by-hatchery basis. Here's the way we ought to do it. Can you perhaps take this amendment and maybe redraft it so as to at least meet the concerns addressed in the amendment?
Well,
and perhaps come back to the committee with a recommendation as to how we can legitimately do it.
Mr. Chairman, that perhaps can be done. I would like to have the committee's authority to work with Legislative Affairs Agency on that and further to address the possible problems of equal protection and possible public policy aspects that would render it illegal to offer a preference like that or require a public employer, a private employer, that is, to give a preference to a laid-off state employee.
Representative Davidson?
Mr. Chairman, if we're going to take more time on this bill, and if we're going to run into time frame difficulties, I'd like to know whether or not perhaps Mr. Ali would comment, but we're up against a time situation here, and if we don't get something done, then that means there's not going to be any job to worry about. So I'd like to know whether or not, is this, how much time do we have to accomplish what has been suggested here, and if there's not time, then the jobs are going to disappear anyway, and maybe we should do the prudent thing.
There are further questions of the witness? Okay, thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I did have a question, but not on the amendment.
I think we can, as long as she's here,
right.
Go ahead.
My question has to do, I mentioned earlier that doing the 12th and 13th legislature, I believe Representative Bettisworth, similar types of legislation, not addressing their contracting out the hatcheries, but transferring the hatcheries to private ownership. I guess at a nominal cost to the various associations. Now, it's my understanding from prior testimony that the legislation was vetoed by the governor. Are you aware of this, and could you share with the committee the governor's reasoning for vetoing the legislation at that time?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Furness, I'm not familiar with the governor's veto of that legislation. I believe that would have been set out in the governor's veto message, however, he would have set out his reason for doing so. I don't happen to know what the reasons were.
Representative Furness, would you like us to request that that information be provided to the next committee referral?
I think it would be helpful because, again, this is not a new issue. It's been around. I think that additional information would give some insight as to how to approach it.
I know Representative Davidson's on resources and the next committee's resources, so that would be helpful. Representative Menard, you don't concern our piece around resources also?
Okay. I'm there a lot, though.
Yeah. Okay, if there's no further questions for the witness. Thank you. Thank you. And by the way, we really appreciate you coming down today. It's very nice you to come down upon such short notice. I would like to ask the representative of the sponsor to make a comment regarding the proposed amendment.
Well, again, like Ms. Regal, I saw it about 5 minutes ago, but I think I'm an attorney now. I haven't looked into this issue, but I think her concerns are quite valid as to the legality of the amendment. But I think the chairman's suggestion regarding the validity of it can be researched and perhaps brought before the next committee referral for that committee.
Okay, so the sponsor would like us to proceed with the bill and have that information available for the next committee referral?
Yes, I will request a legal opinion or have through our office.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, as I recall, a comment from Mrs. Rabel hinted to the possibility of she working with the drafters and perhaps working with this amendment. And personally, I like the idea and I'd like to see it go and make it. And she was asking for direction from this committee as its desire to work with the drafters. And I think it's important that not only does the drafters look at it, but in turn working with the AG to make sure that it's a constitutional provision if we're to do this. And I guess I'm asking for the chair here, some sense of the committee, to maybe pass those instructions on.
Mm-hmm. I think that'd be the way to do it.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, Ms. Regal has worked very closely with all the parties on this legislation, so I'm sure that she would be involved in any discussion. Proposed amendment.
All right, are there any other members of the public who would like to testify on the proposed amendment? Amendments before us now. Please, could come down and join us, and could we have staff get people signed up or have them signed up?
Okay.
Hi. My name is Bruce Suzumoto. I'm with Prince William Sound Aquaculture.
Do you have a copy of the amendment that's before us?
I've seen it.
Okay.
But as far as the proposed amendment, what we are planning as in the future here, if the hatchery operations are contracted out to us, we are planning to hire two of the state's employees that are, actually we've already hired one. One was laid off last year. We hired that individual. And we are going to hire another individual who is the maintenance engineer at the facility. It is my understanding that the present hatchery manager is going to be transferred to another facility. So I don't believe there will be a problem in our particular case with this amendment. However, I do not believe that it's appropriate to require regionals to hire or give preferential treatment to individuals that have worked for the state before. And one of the reasons, and well, one of the reasons why we feel like the facility, we're in a cooperative program right now with the state. And as an example, this year we have taken eggs at the facility, and the production from this facility is much greater than it ever has been. And we feel like we have the staff and the people to accomplish that. We do not want to be bound by something else, another amendment requiring us to put in people other than our own to achieve our goals. It really does not fit with our objectives. I don't know if you have any questions.
Sir,
through the chair, how many persons would you normally employ at the Prince William Sound facility?
Well, we have two hatcheries. One, we have a permanent staff of 16 individuals, and we hire over 100 seasonal individuals throughout the year. We're which is a fairly
16 and over 100 seasonal. What has been your turnover experience over the period of time?
As far as the permanent staff, the
right.
Seasonal staff, it's been fairly low.
Is that, when you say low, are you speaking of 10%, 15, 20, 30, 50?
Maybe 10% a year or something like that.
How long has the Prince William Sound facility been in operation? How long have you been in control?
1 year as president. The corporation has been in existence since 1974.
So you're saying the turnover is quite low. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the further representative Menard.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Bruce, what you are saying is you want to have flexibility on this as far as some people that you feel will work in your organization, and other people that you don't feel you don't want to be bound to.
That's right. I think there's some excellent individuals that work for the state, but there's other people that we can see that will not fit into our organization, and we don't want to be bound by that condition.
Okay. Further questions for the witness? Thank you for your testimony today. If you could sign that register for us, it would be very helpful to staff. I noticed there was one other member of the public who wanted to testify on the proposed amendment. So please. Join us. Thank you. You can just state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Peter Squire, and I have to apologize. I have a bit of a cold today. I'm general manager of the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association. The hatchery that we're involved with is the Hidden Falls Hatchery on the east coast of Baranoff Island. First of all, I'd like to say that we support this legislation. We are working under some very, very tight time constraints. If we hope to facilitate the transfer of this operation this year, we had hoped we would have 2 to 3 months to transition this smoothly, but our time is being eaten away very rapidly. With respect to the amendment that I also saw just before we came in here, as Bruce just stated, we wish to retain the flexibility in employing people. Our feeling is that if we're going to manage the hatchery and operate the hatchery, that we should have full flexibility to do so. I also want to say that there are some individuals that we are interested in. We will take it on a person by person basis. I know one individual who definitely will be coming over with us if we're operating the hatchery. Aside from that, there really aren't any guarantees. But we would hope that we would have the flexibility. And I would say that our board of directors probably would concur with that without a doubt.
Representative Furness?
Pete, to the chair, how many full-time and part-time persons or seasonal persons does the Northeast South?
We have about 8 full-time people for all of our projects, and we hire up to about 40 seasonal and part-time people during a normal year.
What has been your turnover experience?
Very, very low. I've been with the association as general manager for going on 6 years, and in that 6-year period of time, we've had two of our permanent staff go on to other jobs in other states. And in fact, one of them's coming back this year because he likes it up here better. So,
one follow-up question. This may be a little out of line, but let me ask it. Having to do with salaries, I'm sure you're aware of the state salary structure. As general manager, you have first-hand knowledge of the salaries paid within your organization. Considering the 8 position that you currently have versus the 8 position, similar position with the state of Alaska, can you give any comparison as to the salaries of the two?
I haven't looked recently at the latest negotiated rates or anything like that, but I would suspect we're looking on the order of 10 to 15%, and I have no idea how that would fly in the face of comparing benefits. That's a very large difference between us and the state. We don't have a retirement system. We don't.
So you're saying that your salaries would be 10 to 50% lower than what the state
would. I would suspect it'd be on that order, yes.
I assume then that you have no objections to handle to hiring qualified state employees for those persons who may be displaced based upon the...
If they are qualified for the jobs that they apply for, and they're the kind of people that will work into our team of people, we would have no problem with that.
Okay. Representative Boucher.
Yes, forgive me, Mr. Chairman, I may have missed something along the way. You're privately financed, is that correct?
We're funded from a couple of different sources. One, we are the recipients of the 3% enhancement tax that comes through the legislature to us as our basic funding source. Our other source of funds, our main source of funds comes from the sale of surplus fish returning to projects that we already have in operation. We do have minor income, and I think all of us do, from various jobs, work that we do for the federal government, state government sometimes, through research contracts in past years. But those are our basic sources of income.
Is there any foreign capital in it at all?
No.
Okay.
President Furness?
If I may follow up, this is very central. You mentioned that you're the recipient of the 3% enhancement tax receipts, the sale of caucuses, primarily, I guess, in the sale of base. Can you give the committee any idea of the actual dollar amount of those three categories?
In general, the enhancement tax, I believe our new average, once the 87 season is factored in, our new average is approximately $930,000 a year from the 3% enhancement tax. Right now, we are in a developmental phase of some of our larger hatchery projects, our larger production units, and our anticipated number of fish that we expect to sell this coming year is in the neighborhood of 100,000 fish.
And that, as I recall, the bill states that it must be sold at market price, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah. So, what are your anticipated revenues from the sale of fish?
I would imagine $300,000 to $400,000 this year.
And then the sale of eggs, what do you?
We don't plan to sell any eggs this year.
So then now, what do you anticipate your budget will be? I guess we were talking 1987, so what is the actual budget level?
for the coming fiscal year.
Right.
Where this hasn't been approved by our board of directors, which will be meeting in the next week in Sitka to approve this budget, but it will be slightly in excess of $1 million.
I see. You got $1,230,000 with the $300,000 to $400,000 and
$930,000 there. It actually comes out to about 1.2.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just follow one other question. I note in the schedule here, it looks like, I'm not sure if I'm reading this right, but the you're hitting falls and it's right here, operating by state at $1.4 million. General fund was at $500,000. So if that's the case, it looks like the state is spending about $1.4 million. I'm not sure if that's on the hidden falls or all four. Are you familiar with that?
Perhaps Dr. Ali can allude to that. That is not just the hidden falls amount, I'm sure, because hidden falls is considered the last one.
Doctor, did you
want
to respond to that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The operating cost for hidden falls at the present time under state operation for both the chum salmon program and the U.S.-Canada Chinook salmon program and the Dingle-Johnson steelhead program, exclusive of any other program costs, which I believe they must have been included in that particular document, are $860,000.
Okay, further questions of the witness? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Are there any further members of the public wish to testify on the proposed amendment? Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Mears. I'm the Executive Director of Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association, and we have been working with the department to try to keep Trail Lakes Hatchery alive. We would oppose the amendment for the reasons mentioned before, and another thing that came to mind as I listened to the testimony, it seems to me that the individuals that are currently state employees and on the site running these hatcheries already have a substantial advantage over anybody else in the world for continuing the operation of that hatchery. And that is simply that they know how that hatchery works, and they know how it runs, and they know everything there is to know about it. If these people are not, for one some reason or another, are not suitable to us, we're pushing away a substantial amount of expertise there, for must be pretty good reasons as far as we would be looking at it. So I would just like to bring that to the attention of the committee.
Okay. Questions for the witness?
I'm going to ask the same series of questions to Mr. Mears. Mr. Mears, could you share with the committee the amount of the enhancement tax that Cook Inlet receives along with the funds received from selling cockles and eggs?
Sure. It's a little difficult to talk about at this point. The Cook Inlet fishermen had an all-time record year last year, both in terms of numbers and prices. And so our current enhancement tax refund is expected to be in the neighborhood of $2.8 million. However, the average enhancement tax prior to that great big season was somewhere along the neighborhood of $650,000. So, I mean, this was an outstanding season. We generally look at a long-term average being in the $700,000 range.
And the amount we
at this point, okay, the amount we receive from carcass sales, our facility is in its infancy compared to those that the other are operating. Last year, I think we sold $3,000 worth of fish.
If I could ask just one additional question. For the benefit of those of us who are not familiar with how the enhancement tax works, could you explain to the committee very briefly as to how this comes about and how
yes.
you receive your fund?
Yeah, the legislature set up the possibility for there to be a salmon enhancement tax that is either 2% or 3%. Then the fishermen within a region vote upon establishing that salmon enhancement tax within their region. The four regions that are here today have been through that election process. The money then is collected by the Department of Revenue from the processors, from the point of sale. It is tabulated, so on and so forth, and eventually then the money is appropriated back to the associations based in general on the amount collected within the region.
So now, you in turn sell the fish to the cannery?
No.
The processor?
The salmon enhancement tax, the fishermen catch the fish in the common property fishery.
Right.
They sell the fish to the processor.
To the processor.
The processor deducts 2% in some instances or 3% in others, depending on the region.
Right.
Sends that money off to the Department of Revenue.
When you say he deducts, let's say your take is $100, he would take $3 out of that.
He would take 2% of the value that he would normally pay to the fisherman. So say a fisherman had delivered $100 worth of fish, $2 would be slipped out, put in an envelope, sent to Juneau.
Okay, so it's the association, or it's the fisherman's money.
It's the fisherman's money, correct.
That's all, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Further questions for the witness? Thank you very much. Are there any other members of the public wishing to testify on the proposed amendment? You already signed up, sir?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yes, my name is Don Eamon. I'm the general manager of the Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association. We're not directly impacted by the current legislation because there's no hatcheries designated for transfer in our region, but I'd like to just support the comments made by my colleagues here before you for many of the same reasons, is that we would not like to have our hands tied by being required to give preference to the state employees. However, I think we'd be prudent to hire qualified people who would fit into the organization, but we would not like to see ourselves tied to that. And, if we're taking them over, it's to operate them in the most cost-efficient manner that we can. We'd like to get the most productive people that we can on staff. And if the state employees fit into that category, I'm sure we'd hire them. And if they didn't, we wouldn't like to be tied to that.
Okay, questions for the witness?
First question. Mr. Eamon, is it?
Eamon, yes.
Eamon, where do you normally get your permanent employees now? Where are those persons from?
Most of them came from ex-fish and game employees right now. That's about half of our staff right now. We're a permanent staff of 20 people. About half of them are ex-fish and game employees. Others, some were recruited from outside. So.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. He's asking my question. He wasn't even asked the same series of questions.
Yeah, so if we got them all here.
Yes, my question, sir. Was the amount that your organization received an enhancement tax and the amount for the sale of caucus, to the best of your knowledge, for the last season or whatever is most recent data?
Okay, our average 3% tax that we have received in the last 5 years is around $1.5 million. It's ranged from a low of a little over $1 million to almost a high of $2 million. Last year, we sold $1.3 million in salmon in cost recovery efforts, of which of that 1.3, about 25,000 of it was in the sale of carcasses. We don't sell eggs. I mean, eggs outside of what's in the fish, part of the fish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions, Representative Davidson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to clarify that little word tax. It's really an assessment. It's an assessment that's volunteered by the fishermen, right?
They voted on it.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So I just want to make sure that people understand that we're not using general fund tax dollars for the benefit of fishermen in these different regional association areas.
Okay. Further questions for the witness? Thank you for your testimony. Any further members of the public like to testify on the proposed amendment? Okay, seeing none of the amendments before us, Representative Boucher, did you sponsored the amendment for purposes of discussion?
Yeah, well, I brought it up for purposes of discussion because while I'm looking at Mr. Chairman attempting to deal with a problem, and this is, would appear on the surface that this is economic recovery and the other things that fit into our plan, but as I look, it says contracts for the operation of, in this instance, it's state hatcheries, but it could also be other departments. In other words, we open the door and set the precedent here that just opening the door very small for privatization. This is precedent-setting legislation, is it not, or is there other legislation of this type?
You'd like to ask a question?
I'm asking that question generally. I understand the problem and the necessity for dealing with the problem.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Boucher, I think in this case it is a little bit different because the regional aquaculture associations enjoy a very special relationship in this entire field. They've been given, they're given preferences to, I believe, sites for hatcheries already in statute. And you're basically looking at people with proven track records here.
I don't question that. I'm talking about the employee relationship here. Let's say, for example, we decided it's cheaper because we can have lower salaries to start plowing the snow off the highways. I'm talking about the general thoughts that have, let's see if I can express this right, that have occurred nationally over the during the Reagan administration primary. The answer to everything was privatization. You know, we're going to save a lot of money. The city got into that. And it was just simply a way of cutting wages and benefits. And I'm a little concerned that that's why I put this in here, not necessarily put a block in the way of this particular thing here, but are we creating other problems in other areas for state employees? Am I making myself clear?
Well, I would have two responses to that, Representative Boucher, through the chair. One is that that I think Dr. Lee made the point that without this legislation, there are four hatcheries that are going to close.
I understand that.
So you're going to have people unemployed. The second point is that with the money, and Dr. Lee can elaborate on this, that will be saved from this, it will in effect, I believe, save other hatcheries. And I think maybe you can elaborate on that, Brian. What's going to be done with these savings?
Mr. Chairman.
Please.
The reprogramming of the dollars saved will be put into the program at large across the state by region to address critical program deficiencies and increase the economic impact of our program. So for the $1.4 million that we're talking about, there's an $8 million ex-vessel revenue generated from these projects. So it's an economic development initiative that we're talking about here, and it's just virtually impossible to continue running 19 hatcheries with the current budget that we have, so that by working together with the very people that are benefiting from the hatcheries over the last 8 months in a working group environment, we looked at some solutions to this great dilemma. And it would appear that one of the solutions that's most appropriate is to transfer the contract, the operation of the hatchery to those organizations that have fishermen on their board of directors who are benefiting, so that they will then, it's sort of a user pays kind of an approach. It's not that the user group does not pay at the current time in terms of the total revenues generated to the general fund, which are in excess of $60 million for the FY88 year from the general fishery in general.
Well, I'm not through the chair. I think it's a great idea. I just want to make sure that we're not making it profitable on the backs of the people that are being employed by it. That's, do you understand what I'm saying? Loud and clear. It's that simple. You know, if they receive the same benefits that they receive working for you, the thing becomes unprofitable. Am I making sense there? Okay. If it's just because it's growing and economic development and it's going to enhance it and they're going to make a profit, that's fine. But if it's just being placed, the burden, the margin of profit means the reduced amount of wages, that concerns me.
Okay, it's further discussion on the amendment.
Yes, it's to Dr. Ali. If this legislation doesn't pass and you're forced to close those facilities, what do you do with them? Do you mothball them? Do you have an ability of selling them? Some other transfer mechanism?
Mr. Chairman, we would not have the money to mothball or do anything with the facilities. We'd have to walk away from the facilities and we'd lose those economic benefits that accrue to the fishery. We would have to, in order to surplus, in order to deal with, as I understand it, in the case the state property, it would have to go through a surplusing procedure. And these are bonded facilities, of course. And originally, general public voted, I think, on some three occasions to to spend money on the hatchery program in the late 70s, middle 70s, in response to the lack of fish, basically. And so we would have to go through some surplusing procedure to offer them up, I guess, at that point.
So the answer then, you do have at least at some point down this change of transfers or whatever, closing them down, there is a mechanism in place where you would surplus those and I assume make them available to the private sector nonprofit groups.
Mr. Chairman, yes, there are no doubt, I'm sure, I'm not particularly aware of what the mechanism is, but there is no doubt a mechanism. One could consider legislation, of course, to transfer them to specific entities. The concern that I have, and that we have, all the groups have had, and we've been working for some 8 months towards, is the lack of continuity, or therefore the cessation of activities by virtue of closing them down, because this does not only affect the commercial fishermen, it affects the communities in which these people live and the fish dollars that circulate in those communities, and it represents a tremendous negative economic impact. But so that we've been working to develop a mechanism to provide the continuity, and this is the mechanism that we have come up with as a body.
Okay, all right. Representative Kopanen?
Just one question. Have there been any facilities that you walked away from in the past decade?
Mr. Chairman, I'm new to the job within the last 11 months, but as I understand it, a hatchery in Bristol Bay was closed down and in that fashion. I think it was on Nunavagalik, I believe, Fed Division hatchery. It was an experimental hatchery, however.
There was one at Harding Lake, I remember, too, that they were
demolished. Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the interest of expediting this bill to the next committee of referral, I would first like to ask a question of the representative from APEA, and then also perhaps discuss whether or not we should withdraw the amendment at this time and go ahead with the intent to get the Attorney General's office to provide the necessary discussion that we had and take up this amendment and resources. I'd be happy to personally attend to the amendment. My question to the APA, representative, if I may. Could you tell me, please, how many of the 11 affected employees asked that this amendment be included in this legislation?
Well, I cannot tell you how many of the employees, even contacting the employees, were concerned about their employment. I apologize, I didn't have this amendment drafted earlier, but I just drafted it this morning. Our intent was not to stop the legislation. Mm-hmm.
So you did not have a request for this from the affected 11 members?
They are concerned about their employment, and I think the concern was that the hatchery not be contracted out, and this doesn't address that. This addresses the situation.
But they did not ask specifically that you include this amendment.
No.
Okay. All right. Further discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I think I've made my point, and I certainly don't want to slow the legislation down. And if I haven't made it, I'll repeat it. Made my point.
I think the point's real
so
clear.
So with that, I'll withdraw the amendment and get on. I support moving it on to the next committee with the understanding that the Attorney General's office is.
Just for the information of the committee, the bill has been scheduled in Resources Committee this Friday, pending referral from this committee.
Fine.
So the Attorney General's office will have till that time to develop their memorandum or they're thinking about the implications of this proposed amendment, and Representative Davidson has offered to facilitate any member of this committee that would like to bring things before the Resources Committee. Representative Copeland,
go with Finance after that.
I believe we're also going to things.
I think it just goes to Resources.
Just one closing comment, Mr. Chairman, on the amendment. When you look at the relationship...
Representative Copeland just withdrew a second. Just for the record, the amendment's off the table. Yeah. We're back to the main bill now. So in your discussion would be relevant for all of that, but that's what's before us now is the main bill.
And consideration of the amendment, although it's off the table, is my concern here. It's quite evident from the testimony that there is indeed a relationship between the state of Alaska, at least in its... process of at least collecting the proceeds that is
that are ultimately distributed back to diverse associations as an enhancement to their operation. That plus the ability of being able to sell a part of this common resource, this fish, back to the general public and in turn generate monies to operate the facility. So therefore, that's at the time. And when we consider the loss of jobs, particularly in a department that has a history of being able to be shrinking over a period of time, I am concerned that we need to at least make some allowances for the continued employment of these people. After all, we're talking about people, we're talking about families, and a need to have some type of a living. It's evident that the various associations no doubt have their own criteria as to what their staffing alignments are to be, and yet we've heard testimony that for the most part they are drawing from those persons from the Department of Fish and Game. So it does make reasonable sense to me that we would consider this amendment, if not in its present form, at least in some form, to, if not a mandatory, but at least in statute, make reference of the fact that, yes, there are these personnel who have the experience of running these facilities and they are being displaced, therefore we need to give some consideration to their reemployment. And I would certainly hope that the members of Kodiak will follow through with this commitment to see that that takes place.
Representative Ellis.
Chairman, I'm not sure who to exactly to direct this question to, but I have a concern or a question about the bill on page 3, line 22. It says, fish returning to hatcheries and sold for human consumption shall be of comparable quality to fish harvested by commercial fishermen in the area and sold at prices commensurate with the current market. In terms of quality, maybe Dr. Lee can answer this or someone else. If the quality of the returning fish is superior to that harvested by commercial fishermen in the area, I don't know if that would be the case or not, if that's a... an unrealistic thing, but if it were, does that mean that that fish could not be sold for cost recovery purposes?
Please, Mr. Chairman, I believe the thrust of that deals with concern on the part of the fishermen undercutting the price. It's the reverse kind of concern, I believe. But as I understand this, and I think as you talk to the regional associations and the various individuals involved in cost recovery, the fish may not necessarily be superior to the fish caught in the common property fishery. They are equal in quality. At times, they are superior in the sense that they're sold. And can be in certain circumstances, for instance, that I'm most aware of in Prince William Sound, sold and processed immediately, fresh, live, kicking on the fin, so to speak. And in that sense, the quality in a brine situation is very good. So it's just a matter of, it's kind of a qualitative difference in terms of hours.
I don't think you answered the question. The question was, would it prohibit, maybe I didn't understand the question, would it prohibit fish of a higher quality from being marketed?
I think what Dr. Lee is saying is that the price is the operative concern here, and that the fish, regardless of its quality, would be required or is required in the current statute to be sold at prices commensurate with the fish that's being harvested in the area by the fishermen.
Yeah,
I guess that's what it's really getting to. The quality is really secondary.
Yes, it has to do with not undercutting the fisherman's market in terms of conducting the cost recovery operation, as I understand it.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Mr. Chairman, I guess I just remind everybody, I think we're all aware that Representative Sund has a resolution that would direct state policymakers to write a state operating budget that would increase funds for our resource agencies, the three major ones, by just 1%. Because it's really a shame the situation we're finding ourselves in dealing with this legislation in the first place, based on all the value that comes back to the state. I'm a supporter of the ocean ranching program, and I hope everyone here will support Representative Sund in that effort.
Representative Cookman.
I hope that any money saved out of the operational cost of the hatchery will be used to maintain staff in the department, in the division, so that we can have an adequate biological control over the existing spot.
Would the committee, how does this sound for an idea? Why don't I have our staff draw up a letter to the Resources Committee saying that we're very concerned about this whole issue of contracting out state services, and that we understand that there's a real time constraint with this legislation, and there was a lot of concerns expressed in our committee about it, and we hope that they will address that, and the Attorney General's opinion and information will be considered by them. Would that be acceptable
to
the committee?
That's satisfactory to me.
Okay. Yeah,
I think we should also perhaps mention we did not mention specifically, but that state employees who are losing a position should be considered as well.
Right. Well, we could add in there that we're very concerned about that issue, and that if there's any way to address that, that we'd like to see that explored in resources also, and we're not necessarily giving our seal of approval to that portion of this legislation. We're not.
Chairman, there are some people right within the administration that are bound and determined they're going to privatize everything from public broadcasting on down, and I want to send them a message loud and clear. This may not be the intention of this group, but we damn near did it last year with public broadcasting.
We'll try to have a letter to bring back to you Thursday, because this will be resources on Friday, and see if it meets the agreement of the body here. Representative Davidson.
I'm sorry, you said you were going to bring this back on Friday.
No. We're going to move this legislation because they won't be able to read it across the floor and have the hearing and resources on Friday if we hold it over. Well, what we will do is I'll bring you the letter that we're going to send to them, and we can talk about that letter on Thursday.
Chairman, simply a statement here that the fact that many fisheries issues are very complex, I appreciate my colleagues realizing that you can be the fish until it swims away. And I'd like to move that we let this one swim on to the next committee of referral, and so move.
The judge has already done
that. Individual recommendations. Any objections? Seeing no objections, the bill passes through the committee on resources. Okay. Can we see if Mr. Lear is still available? Okay. And then can we check with Representative Boyer's office, see if he's going to be down here sometime later on?
Representative Boyer's office is over there. Take it.
All I could see was this bright.
I agree with you, Red. A real serious problem.
In there, the Department of Transportation may contract out.
The red flag with
the administration may contract out.
Red flag.
Got it.
All right. We have a House Bill 432. Bring that up at this time. And we do have a committee substitute that addresses some of the concerns we talked about last time we talked about 432. And that's the trade-up, trade-down legislation. And we have a proposed committee substitute. Mark's out trying to get Ron Lear on the line, apparently.
I'm glad I made it before the end.
This is different. I think we get the same sort of considerations on this bill in terms of in terms of it being important to economic interests. Do you think we'll get tied up in the committee again?
Well, you know, the problem, just under general discussion on this legislation, gentlemen, the problem, of course, is that all these bills are funneling down to a narrow spout in Judiciary Committee, and it's about, I would like to move this legislation today to get it. Okay.
Well, I think the representative who's expressed the most concerns about this legislation ought to be here.
Who's that?
Representative Davidson can come back and join us.
Mr. Lear, are you online?
Yep, everyone.
Okay, we can hear you fine. So we're going to have a short presentation from Mr. Bagey to my office as to the differences in the committee substitute.
I asked AHFC statewide.
If you want to ask him, he's online. Ron's going to be listening, so if you want to ask him, we can talk to him about that now.
I had a list stuck that I can.
Why don't you get it? We'll ask him that.
I'll be right back.
Okay. Mr. Bagey, can you join us? Just state your name for the record, and could you walk the committee through the changes in the proposed committee substitute?
Yes. My name is Mark Bagage, and on the committee substitute, we changed some minor changes on line.
Did you switch this on?
Oh.
Yeah.
My name is Mark Bagage. On the committee substitute, we made some minor changes. On line 14, we changed the word that reads, the purpose of this act is to. We changed the word from encourage to direct. On page one, item D, we added in the part of the cooperation of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the mortgage insurers. The mortgagor shall in each case work together to reduce a portion of the negative equity that may be present in individual cases. We then added E, which is subject to appropriation. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation may use up to 1% of its total fund equity to achieve the purposes of this section. And item F, in this section we define the word residence to include mobile homes. And item D and E of that section is basically taking what was discussed on some participation by all the individuals involved in each foreclosed home to work together to reduce that negative equity, and then coming up with some sort of formula or cap that would be able to be used, that Alaska Housing could use up to but not to exceed an amount. And total fund equity is a term they use to define all their assets and revenue that they currently have in their corporation. And that fund amount doesn't vary much each year, the total fund, so it was easy to attach a percentage on that.
Okay, and we had testimony in the Banking and Housing Finance Subcommittee, the Economic Recovery Committee, that there was a total of about $250 million
in total fund assets,
and that this 1% would represent about
17.5. Total fund equity represents the total amount available, which is $1.5 billion, and we in the Housing and Banking Committee, Representative Donnelly, was informed that $250 million would be available, basically cash that's available.
Okay, so to make that clear to the committee, the 1% is based on the total amount of money, and the actual available in testimony as to actual available in sort of cash assets of various types was between $200 and $250 million. The 1% equates to about $17.5 million that would be available for AHFC, or this is actually kind of like advice from the legislature. We'd like to see them use up to that amount to facilitate trades on residential properties.
Right, and there's no real term they use for those, what we've called unrestricted funds or non-collateral funds.
All right, are there questions for Mr. Bagage on the committee substitute? Representative Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any particular problem with the amendments in committee substitute. In fact, I suggested three of them, but on the one that I wasn't aware of, subsection D, where it talks about the mortgage insurers and HFC working together to reduce a portion of the negative equity. Why have we limited it to reducing, I mean, that may be the realistic view here, but restricted it with this language to reducing a portion of the negative equity and not just leave it open and say, work together to reduce the negative equity that may be present in individual cases. It's not an explicit requirement, but it's directing that the interested parties work together to reduce the negative equity.
The portion was put in there, and it, to word it like you had it, sounds fine. The portion was put in there that each participant would work at, you know, proportionally to reduce the negative equity. It's not saying that just a portion would be reduced, but the mortgagor, the insurer, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation will work together proportionally to reduce the negative
equity. So what it really means then, if I'm understanding you, is it's a directive for each party to work to reduce portion of the negative equity that concerns them?
Yes, but it's, all of it concerns them. I mean, it's all the same negative equity. The issue there is that we wanted to make sure that each participant participated in reducing the negative equity, that it just wouldn't be Alaska Housing, or it wouldn't be just the mortgage. Okay. Or
see, I was reading it to mean that we didn't want them to do more than work together to reduce some amount of the negative equity of the homeowner.
To clarify, your wording sounds fine by deleting the word portion out, basically, is what you're doing. You say working together to reduce the negative equity.
At this point in time, the committee substitute is before us for amendment before we adopt it as a committee substitute. So the chair would entertain any motions to make any changes.